Well, you know, the way the lectionary is organized as in our current use, we always expect there to be a strong connection between the first reading and the gospel. And so it is today. In both the first reading and the gospel, we have seven brothers. Although the context of those seven brothers is completely different, could hardly be more different in the two readings. First reading comes from the second book of Maccabees, probably the youngest book in the Old Testament, having been written only about a century and a half before the life of the Lord Jesus. So at that time, the Holy Land was ruled by a Greek king, one of the heirs of Alexander the Great. And this king, Antiochus Epiphanes, had decided that he wanted all the people under his rule to have uniform customs, the same culture, the same religion. And of course, he wanted that culture to be Greek. So he profaned the temple in Jerusalem. He introduced the gymnasium in Israel, which was a Greek invention. And he tried to get the people under coercion to give up the practices of their old quirky religion, keeping the law of Moses. So in the first reading today, we hear a part of the story of seven brothers and their mother who, one after the other, went to their deaths because they refused to eat pork and violate the law of Moses. That story from the second book of Maccabees is a great story of fidelity and courage. The willingness that that family had, the seven brothers and their mother, to give up life itself, to be faithful to God and to his covenant. In the gospel today, the seven brothers are completely different. They're not real people. They are characters in this theoretical problem that the Sadducees put to Jesus. As we heard in the gospel, the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. And so they had this problem for Jesus, this theoretical problem that they thought would demonstrate how bizarre it would be to believe in the resurrection. So you heard the story, there's seven brothers. The law of Moses says that if a man dies leaving a widow but no child, the man's brother has to take that woman as another wife for himself so that she would have offspring. Because there were no pensions, there was no social security, the support that a woman had in her old age, usually being predeceased by her husband, was what her son or her son-in-law could provide for her. So that was the law of Moses to make sure that widows were taken care of. The Sadducees say, okay, how about this? A case where there are seven brothers, each of them marry the same woman, they all die without children. At the resurrection that you believe in, whose wife will she be? So, completely different kind of story. Is the connection between those two readings just that there are seven brothers? No, not at all. The deeper connection between the two readings is the issue of the resurrection. We Christians often suppose that hope for the resurrection only came into the world with the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. That's not entirely accurate. In Judaism, even before the coming of the Lord, there was a sort of misty, not very well-defined hope that the dead would be raised. From the very beginning, the Israelites, the Jewish people, buried their dead with their bodies intact. This was unusual in the ancient world. Most cultures cremated their dead. You know, it was rather respectful and hygienic. That was important. But the Jews always buried the body. Even though, at the beginning, when God first made the covenant with Abraham, there was no promise of immortality or life after death. We take that for granted as being part of religion. But when God first made the covenant with Abraham, what God promised from his side was that Abraham and Sarah would always have descendants, which, you know, is a kind of immortality in this world. We say that ourselves, you know, that this or that person lives on through children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. That was the promise, that Abraham and Sarah would always have descendants and they would have a land on which they could live that would be their own. That was the promised land. As the history of Israel went on, however, a belief in a resurrection, a promised resurrection, developed under the influence of the prophets, finally, really explicitly stated just in the last books of the Old Testament. The book of Daniel, which is one of the latest books in the Old Testament, and the books of Maccabees. That was the place where this hope for the resurrection was clearly formulated. At the time of the Lord, it was still a disputed question among the Jews. The Pharisees believed in a resurrection. So this is one case where the Pharisees were on the right side. When the Pharisees are right, you've got to give that to them. It was the Sadducees who were on the other side, denying the resurrection. So they come to Jesus with this snotty problem, trying to undermine that hope in the resurrection. As the history of the Jews went on, hope for the resurrection became more generally accepted. Today, I think it is largely universal among believing Jews. You can see it, in a sense, if you ever have a chance to visit Jerusalem. Across the Kidron Valley to the east of the city of Jerusalem, near where the Lord had his agony in the Garden of Gethsemane, there is a huge hillside just covered with burial vaults. It's not like our scenic American cemeteries with trees and lawns and all that. It's just vault by vault by vault. Where there's a path between them, it's just rocky hillside. If you didn't know it was a sacred place, you would think it kind of was in bad need of being spruced up a little bit. It's very, very forlorn looking with all these graves and rocks and dirt. But the point is that the Jewish people who are buried there want to be as close as possible to Jerusalem because their belief is that when the promised Messiah comes, he will come to Jerusalem, of course, the holy city, and that's when the promise of the resurrection of the just will be fulfilled. Very widespread hope in Judaism. But exactly what that resurrection looks like remains rather murky. I consulted a Jewish source to get ready for the homily today, and the rabbi who is writing about it said that, you know, the details of the resurrection of the just are not clear. We do not know exactly how that will look. Once the dead are raised, then we will consult them about the details. So, that for Judaism. For us, of course, as Christians, there is nothing murky or unclear about the hope we have in the resurrection of the dead, the resurrection of the body. For us, it is, well, of course, not crystal clear. It remains a mystery. But we have a very good idea of what that's like because it has already come to fulfillment in the person of the Lord Jesus. 3 days after he was put to death, when the women went to his grave to anoint his mortal body was not there. It had been raised up. It had been transfigured. It had been glorified in a risen body that was no longer susceptible to the limitations that we know in our mortal bodies. There would be no more aging, no more illness, no more injury, no more fatigue, no more hunger. No longer subject to those limitations, but still and all, a true body. The Lord rose in a true body, a glorified body. We know that because he said to Mary Magdalene, "Do not cling to me." So his body could be touched. We know it from that encounter with the Apostle Thomas, who doubted, of course, where he says to Thomas, "Put your finger in the nail marks and your hand into my side. Doubt no longer, but believe." The Lord had a true body in which the wounds could be seen and touched. Also, in one of the resurrection experiences, resurrection appearances, the Lord asks for a piece of fish and eats it in the presence of his apostles. Not because he was hungry, he would never be hungry again, but to show that he could eat because he lived forever, in a true body. That is the hope that our Christian faith gives us, a hope in the resurrection. Of course, we always think about the resurrection very intensely in springtime. When we celebrate Easter Sunday, a whole week of Easter days, 50 days of an Easter season. But we think about the resurrection of the dead today because we're only 2 weeks from the last Sunday of the church's year, the Feast of Christ the King. That feast celebrates our hope in the last day, when the Lord will come again, his glory revealed to all, seen by all as judge of the living and the dead. That's the moment at which we expect the resurrection of the dead, that our bodies will be raised up, transfigured, glorified, whatever the best language is, in likeness to the risen body of the Lord himself, that our glorified bodies will be reunited with our souls. Because we were created body and soul for God, we were created body and soul for his glory, to glorify him in what we do with our bodies, to glorify him in what we do with our souls. I am not just a soul. I am a person. You are a person who has a soul and a body. The fullness of the redemption is the union of those two parts, two aspects of who I am. Glorified in union with the Lord Jesus, whom we have tried to follow in this life by bearing a small share in his cross. That's what gives us the hope of being glorified with him in his resurrection. This is the hope that has animated the lives of Christians through 20 centuries now, that has consoled us in so many problems, that has given the martyrs strength of course, countless, countless, countless Christian martyrs, more in the 20th century than in any previous century. More Christians put to death by Stalin and Hitler than had been done in by the Roman Empire, by far. That's the hope that enlivened Christian life through all these centuries, our hope in the resurrection that is based on the resurrection of the Lord, about which there is nothing murky. It was not a spiritual continuation of existence. Our hope of immortality is not that, you know, my energy will somehow return to the great energy of the cosmos and it will still be in there. No, it is personal, that I myself am known by God, my Creator, loved by Him, that He has invited me to live in union with His divine Son, and that because of that I have a hope of eternity, the resurrection of the dead. We give thanks to God today as we celebrate this Eucharist for that hope that He has given us. We ask that that hope might live in the hearts of all those who have been entrusted with the transmission of the faith and the preaching of the gospel. And that animated by that hope, we might freely renounce anything that separates us from the Lord, that we might live as His good disciples.